Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. We're joined by Professor Conroy and Kevin McNulty of Conroy Gold and Charles Archer, investor and freelance journalist. Welcome all.
Hello.
Charles, you recently put out an article on your website, Investing Strategy, titled The Conroy Gold Edit. The article discusses the two categories of gold stocks on the FTSE AIM Index, popular companies with significant market caps and proven finds like Greatland Gold and Amaroq Minerals, and microcaps with potential for high rewards. You highlight Conroy Gold as a promising microcap with advanced joint ventures and drilling achievements. The piece emphasizes the importance of due diligence before investing in AIM or mining shares, presents a detailed analysis of Conroy Gold's prospects, including its historical performance, the impact of macroeconomic factors, and its positioning for potential growth. So what great an opportunity for you to field some questions to Professor Conroy and Kevin McNulty. I'll hand the floor over to you, Charles.
Wonderful. Thanks for the introduction. Okay, Professor. Here's opening question, opening salvo. If you're a high net worth investor or a retail investor, there is almost 100 small cap junior resource companies, you know, available to you in London. Why should somebody invest in Conroy Gold, in your own words?
Because they make a great deal of money out of it.
Very good. That's a good start.
So,
Certainly,
we are in a stage now in which we have not just one gold district, new gold district entirely to ourselves with several targets along it, one or two of which could be very big indeed. And Kevin and his colleagues have recently discovered a second gold trend. So it's pretty big. As well as that, we already have a major joint venture partner with Apple Financial Resources for a large number of the licenses. So we're in a very, very happy position. It's taken a long time, but they'll had to get into a world-class position often. It does take a long time if you're ever lucky enough to do so. And I think we're the only exploration company, I think, in the world at the moment, which has two entire district-scale gold trends to itself.
Which is incredibly impressive, perhaps because you're based in Ireland, there's not so many operators around. But you probably, would you say you've been quite lucky to get those trends to yourself? Or would you say that's a combination of luck and hard work?
Well, there's been an awful lot of hard luck, of hard work. But you always need a certain amount of good luck as well. But I think, in a sense, the fact that we're in Ireland, which is well known as an international zinc province, since we ourselves discovered Galway there, that it was, even though it's a cultural history of gold, there hasn't been a mining history of gold of any significance. So we have been able to get on with our work. And under the licensing regulations here, as long as we did our commitments, we've been able to build up this land situation accompanying our discoveries, which we just wouldn't have been able to do in Canada or elsewhere in the world. There'd have been a load of people that on top of one. So that is very, very positive from now on. And you might say it's been negative now because people haven't thought of Ireland as a gold province. That obviously, it's always in a market you're trying to raise money to do the exploration. Now we're in the very happy position, which we've enjoyed venture partner to cover all the very heavy lifting in terms of exploration expenditure. So we're in a very, very good position that way. And as well as that, of course, the object of the joint venture exercise is not simply to bring in one gold mine, to bring in a series of gold mines along with two trends. And we're seeing in one part of the trend, and perhaps Kevin talked more about this than I, we're seeing the possibility, I think it's fair to say, Kevin, that this could be a very substantial gold find indeed in the Clay Lake area.
So would you say the Clay Lake area is the best target that you have at the moment, or is it just one of several?
The best target, the most advanced target we have is at Clontibret, where you could go almost immediately with a conventional open pit mine, and it's still open to depth and open on all sides. And it's quite big in itself. You're certainly, I think, looking at well over a million ounces, perhaps much more than that. On the other hand, say the target in its surface extent is far larger than Clontibret. And the sort of results we've been looking at and seeing suggest that it could be metrical targets indeed, a metrical deposit indeed, because it's approximately 2 kilometers in depth, a kilometer in width, and that's pretty big by any standards.
Indeed. Kevin, could you just, from a geologist perspective, what is it about these two targets which are so prospective?
There's lots of things about the targets that are very prospective, particularly as Richard was stating there. The Perry Ennett section of the Clay Lake area is quite extensive, but the whole Clay Lake anomaly, which is 3 kilometers long and up to about 2 kilometers of width, we have some serious intersections in that area, 100 meters at 0.6. Just to give you an idea of the scale of that, some people just can't understand the scales, but that's nearly the length of Big Ben. Actually, I think Big Ben is just under 100 meters. So we have an intersection of gold, pretty much the height of Big Ben going down. And we've repeated that recently this year as well in some of our step-out drilling, where we got another 80-meter intersection. And then further out as we stepped out, we saw spectacular intersections where we got over 40 meters at over 1.2 grams a ton. But as we are building out in Clay Lake, we're starting to see this area has the potential for very high tonnage and overall gold content. To give you an example of that, one of the mines, which was a world-class mine I worked on in West Africa, Ghana, which is the Teberebie Gold Mine, that was about 3 kilometers long in strike. The mining width ranged from about 20 to 25 meters, and the grades ranged from 1 to 1.5 grams a ton. We were producing 350,000 ounces of gold per annum out of that mine. So this is the type of scale we're aiming at in Clay Lake. And then as Richard mentioned about Contibert, which is just down the road, so you could actually look at bringing these projects in jointly together.
It's three or four miles, isn't it? It's nothing.
It's about just over 7 kilometers, 7.5 kilometers. So it's a very short distance. And there we've already established a resource. You know, it's only on a small portion of the target. It's only on less than 20% of it. We have 500,000 ounces. The grade is a good grade at 2 grams a ton. And it's still very open. It's open to depth. And as I say, it's open along strike. And we're seeing some indications now in the drilling that we did at the beginning of the year, where we had the outcrop, which we had outside, about 250 meters outside the resource. But the drilling there, we intersected 8.3 grams a ton, over half a meter. So we know there is gold potential significantly outside the resource area as well to grow into.
So this is my question. Assuming that Dimir Export, which is your joint venture partner on these licenses, chooses to engage in phase two, which I think is a given at this point, but obviously you have to put that caveat in there. Sure. Is it likely they're going to go for infill drilling of what you've already done so far to better define the resource and potentially put up a resource update? Or do you want to expand the resource further, or a mix of the two? Do you know, Kevin, yet? Or is that actively being discussed at the moment?
I would think that one of the things they're looking to is to grow a resource, certainly in Clay Lake, and to build out on what we're doing in Clay Lake. They seem to be extremely excited with the results we're getting, but that would be one of the things I would see. But I think they see the whole license area as having ginormous potential, and that's why they originally came in. So it's not just Clay Lake and Clontibert, but don't forget we have identified a 65-kilometer gold trend in the Orlock Bridge area. But we've also identified this new area in Skilmartin, which is another 24 kilometers. So we have been doing work in these other areas as well. But I certainly think going forward, one of the focuses definitely will be the Clay Lake area.
In terms of that, as for you, Professor, in terms of, you know, actually getting the gold out of the ground, because I guess what one of the complaints has been that this has taken a long time, even though, as we know, drilling and getting, you know, a gold resource does take time. What kind of a time frame will you have for actually getting your first bit of gold out of your ground, out of the ground, the first gold pour? Is that going to be a couple of years away, maybe longer, or do we not quite know yet?
Probably if we were doing it just all by ourselves, we would go to bring in a conventional open pit mine at Clontibert, perhaps a production of 30,000 ounces or so a year. Very comfortable, very nice. Most junior explorers would be very glad to have that, or to bring in a cash flow immediately and so on. And we're at a stage in Clontibert where they might have been infill drilling and other work as well. Was offered to do, but nonetheless we'd be able to expedite all of that very quickly. However, with our joint venture partner and with the potential world-class size of the Clay Lake target, I think we'd certainly be prepared to wait a couple of years there extra, because the rewards are going to be, hopefully, never guarantee anything, but the rewards could be immense in the Clay Lake area. So That's the sort of time, those are the time frames that we're looking at. I think our partners would obviously be looking at the very, very large target that's there. We're very happy to go along with this.
Yeah, so I mean, the general idea is at the end of the agreement that you have at the moment, that Demir will have 57.5% of the assets and you'll retain 42.5%. And then obviously you can decide, you know, how you're going to go forward. But the idea is you're going to have a bankable feasibility study or equivalent within the next couple of years, or at least some of the licenses, which you'll then be able to market out to majors to get a mine on site. Is that the general idea?
That's the general idea. Under the terms of the agreement, our joint venture partner covers all the costs right through to receiving a mining permit, planning permission, land acquisition. They cover all that. Yeah. And then when we get to that stage, we can still retain 42.5%.
Yeah.
Or various other options, right? That's matter royalty. And that way will apply to each mining project in the entire two districts. So it really is quite a good deal. And it's very interesting. We brought in a mine before around the Galway mines. There we brought in a combination of equity and debt. We won't need to do that with this mine. Our good colleagues will be covering 57.5%, and we're already getting some institutions making tentative inquiries as to providing the formal finance for the remaining 42.5%. So it's a very happy position to be in, and we'll have that option with each of the targets going forward. And certainly to think of the possibility there of a very large target indeed, a very large deposit, a very large mine, it's certainly a very good position to be in.
In terms of, okay, so Demir has spent roughly 6 million euros on drilling so far. I think that's about right.
Yes, that's right.
Your market capitalization, and I haven't checked this morning, but it was 5.8 million a couple of days ago when I started researching.
Yes.
And you spent millions on drilling before Demir came on board. Why is the market cap so? Is it just a very good opportunity? Or have people, you know, been waiting too long? Or is it just a case that you're thinking now is the right time to jump in? What do you think?
Well, I think there hasn't been a good market recently, but quite apart from that, I think that the fact that we've been working for a long time, people out in us, that we're heard that we were working there doing exploration and heard it then a couple of years later, and haven't fully taken up all the progress that we're making with that exploration, that we're actually discovering two entire new gold districts. Secondly, I think, again, the question of Ireland. I don't think we still go about winning anywhere near as much as we are where we're in Canada or Australia. Or
what. No, completely Canada. Agree.
You know, that just would have grabbed us and so on. But I think it's quite understandable in a sense. People, even though the facts are now laid on the table with all the qualifications and so on that you yourself have mentioned, but nonetheless, it's all out in public. And quite frankly, we've seen this before some years back when we made a major zinc discovery, nowhere near as big as the gold discovery is making, nonetheless a major mine eventuated from it. And yet, even after we had gone public with pretty well all the results and so on, it took quite a long time, about 18 months or so, before people really began to take it on board. We saw the price of that company go from 23p to over £7. Now, whether or not, never forecast what will go in relation to this, but we're very happy to have our own shareholding in it and to look to the future.
Well, you do have interesting shareholders on the board. I say interesting because these are people that I even know have come into contact with over the past. Yeah. So Paul Johnson is on there, Jonathan Swan, high net worth investor, and then I suppose Patrick O'Sullivan, but I know a slightly checkered past, obviously back in 2017. But I would say that the fact that all of those investors who have a history of making money, they're all still invested in the company. That must surely say something to the value that you have. Would you agree?
Well, I agree. Paul Johnson, a very nice person and so on. But I think I saw things as an early stage and endeavored to take over the company. Will he succeed the board? But nonetheless, I think in a sense, they're making it complimented and making it as a very early stage. And as you say, they've stayed on. We're obviously staying on ourselves. And the whole object in exploration is to make a major economic discovery. you're taking quite high risks. Pulse expression programs don't succeed. But if you do succeed, you want to succeed on the scale which will reward the risk and the time that you take it. And hopefully we're approaching that stage now.
Yeah, which is exactly why I wanted to cover you guys, because I think that where you are in terms of closest to production or closest to some real value inflection compared to where the share price is and the register that you have of shareholders, it blows me away. I think the value disconnect is massive. Do you know, I think it's one of those things. Obviously, the past couple of years, it's not just been Conroy Gold. It's been almost every small cap explorer has been beaten down by the wider market environment. We're now in this position where hopefully inflation is getting, relatively under control. Interest rates will start to fall slightly. A lot more investors will come back in, to the risk markets. Because as you say, this is, not without risk. But yeah, I think you'll be one of the prime beneficiaries. Kevin, I've got a question for you. And this is about the Skull Martin gold trend. So Cream Kill. There was an RNS saying that you had visible gold at the trend. When it says visible gold, what does this mean? You're literally walking along.
I can actually see it in the rock.
Yeah, sorry. I know it sounds crazy, like.
Yeah, usually it's absolutely crazy.
I used to put in a hard hat on, and walking into a mine. I'm not used to sort of walking along the, the field of violins and just gold rocks popping up, which sounds wonderful.
That's it. Absolutely. Yeah, there's a outcrop there that you can hit it with a hammer, and literally as you take it off, you can see it's totally peppered with gold in it.
That's right. I know, but it's kind of, it's one of those things, isn't it? Because you read it, and a lot of the people, I guess, this goes back to, whenever I visit a site, I'm often kind of like, words don't really do it justice. And especially when the area that your licenses cover, hundreds and hundreds of kilometers.
Yeah, so we're 1,000 square kilometers.
1,000, a thousand square kilometers. It's very difficult to visualize that, right, for the average investor.
Yep.
But then when you're saying that there's gold on the surface, you've done 6,000 meters of drilling. You have a joint venture partner with Damir Export. And I think one of the problems you might have is that UK investors possibly don't know how big Damir is in Turkey. It's a household name. And then it's a case of, you've got your primary target, which is Klontebret. But Clay Lake seems like it could be really great as well. I guess, from a geologist's point of view, how significant are we talking here? I mean, you use the word, I'm not sure it was you personally, but the company definitely used the words world-class potential for Clay Lake. Would you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, the scale of the geochem anomaly, well, as I say, which is 3 kilometers long and up to 2 kilometers in width, the scale of the intersections we're seeing there, as I said, the longest intersection in the British Isles, that's where I was comparing it to Big Ben. Like, you can imagine you've drilled down that length and you've got completely that mineralized with gold.
Mm.
And you've got these, it's in a scale to mines I've worked on that have been world-class mines. So that is why Damir came in, and certainly Clay Lake is a standout in relation to the widths that are intersected. Clontibert has got some excellent potential. But we're also seeing the potential at Clontibert at depth. We believe that Clontibert could have some interesting things happening at depth as well. It's sort of akin to what we see in Fosterville. And as we know, it's Fosterville, when they went down below 800 meters drilling down there, they started getting some of the best gold intersections in the world. We believe that the Clontibert has very similar potential. And it wasn't until they got deeper that they realized, we have, 2.5 million ounces there, something like that, at over 50 grams a ton head grade.
Yeah, so I mean,
that's like the type of potential we're trying to look at in some of these areas that we have.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Kevin, one of the things that you're looking at as an investor is, are you going to be able to start off with open pit mining? If you can then, increase the resource and then talk about, underground mining, which is a lot more expensive, even though the rewards are greater. Sure. That's great, but you want to have the gold on the surface, ideally, to start with. What world-class mines have you worked on before in the past that give you the confidence that what Conroy holds could be analogous?
Well, I worked in Ghana before I started my career, actually, in Ghana, where I worked for a number of years on the Teberebi gold mine. That was the second biggest gold producer outside South Africa. It's part of the Tarkwain conglomerates.
Wow.
So, and as I say, we were producing about 350,000 ounces per annum. in relation to that. I was also on board with the exploration up in the Sefwi area, and now Newmont have a massive mine up in that area. I did the initial work up in an area called Langodi in northern Ghana, which again, I think has been worked on up there, which has gone up to millions of ounces now. And yeah, no, I've worked in Niger, Burkina Faso. I have worked in South America as well. So yeah, I've been around the course a few times as well.
And you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, we're being very supported by the management here. It's, you know, these things don't happen quickly, and management are very supportive in relation to developing the project in its entirety. So it's a collaborative work.
Good, good. That's answered all my questions. That's all I want to hear, to be honest. I think I just find it astounding that the share price is where it is versus the joint venture you have and the assets that you have on the ground. And I think that it's something that will eventually reverse. I think relatively shortly, once people start to realize, I would guess there's a significant number of investors who are waiting for phase two to be signed off. Because obviously, once phase two is signed off, you'll then go, look, there's millions of euros of more drilling, which is going to be paid for, and therefore your risk is much, much lower. Professor, here's a question for you. I can always come up with more questions. So Demir wants to ideally drill for the next couple of years, and maybe another sort of 6,000 meters or so of drilling, maybe more. And I guess my question is, how supportive are they as a partner at the moment? I mean, we don't really get that much information about them, but are they 100% all in with you at the moment, would you say?
Absolutely, 100%. Demir are the actual mining company. Is a privately owned company by the Koch family. They control, have a major interest in control Demir Holdings, which is a very large company indeed, employs approximately 100,000 people and covers a whole range of things from pharmaceuticals to banking to manufacturing or motors on license, so these sort of things. So it's a very large company, but the Demir Export, with whom we are in joint venture part, is totally owned by the family, one of the wealthiest families in the world. I think they're ranked 47 or something, round about there in the index. And they have a record of success over the last 80, 90 years in many respects. And I can quite understand their emphasis on the very large target indeed. So they'd be very happy with them. Tantebrit, you'd be making quite a lot of money from Tantebrit, but the possibility of a world-class mine in which they would own 57.5% for their first joint venture outside Turkey, could be very, very successful indeed. It's always got the caveats, but I can quite understand coming from their position and seeing how it could result. We hope it'll make and look forward to it making a great deal of money for this company. But they'll be making even more than 57.5%.
Yes, indeed. Well, I guess the question is, you know, they must be coming to the end of phase one now, if not already have. Do you think phase two is going to get signed off? Would you say that's very likely to happen?
It's very likely to happen. I think that they'd like to anticipate other people's what they may do or what they're absolutely entitled not to proceed further. Be clear about that. But with the results that are coming through, the price of gold where it is, I don't see that as very likely to happen unless there's something totally outside their control. Middle East at the moment is in a very difficult situation as well. And the Turkish economy has been under a lot of pressure. And if that be the case, there are a lot of other people, to be honest, knocking on our door, because this is something which could be very big, even for the very major gold companies. And indeed, there is an argument because of the sheer size of it and because these major gold companies, of course, are involved in the entire gold industry, that we might even consider, give thought to a third partner coming in. This is not unusual in the gold industry in Nevada. You'll have two or three of the very large companies coming together, one of them probably operating, but the others only very substantial percentages. Everything is open, and with such large assets coming up, certainly the likelihood is that there'll be many developments.
We've got Clontibret. I'm sorry. So you had the JORC compliant total resource, 1 million ounces of estimated gold, which covered just 20% of the target area. Are there any plans to update that JORC compliant resource, or is that something for the future?
That's probably could do so, in actual fact. But again, with Tetrit, I suppose the immediate attraction there, and indeed you're mentioning it yourself, it's very shallow. So with a pit, the actual mineralization literally comes to the surface. We could go there and look at the stream, and Captain could show you the mineralized boulders in the stream, and it goes down from there. And we're only looking perhaps 150, 200 meters at the moment. So it would be very easy to simply update one of the portions of it a bit further for whatever the resource might come out at, 500,000 or 600,000 or whatever. But that still represents less than 20% of the actual Tetrit target area. And as Kevin was saying, we don't know what's underneath. We know that the veins of gold are running downwards. How far do they go? Do they change in grade? Is it in fact the possibility of Fosterville? But we're very happy because it's an extraordinary position to be in, with a whole series of gold targets, with at least one of them looking as though it could possibly be world-class in size, with a partner, with both finances and with other people, I can tell you, still keeping in touch with us. So we're very happy.
Well, you all sound very happy. I'm very happy. Yeah. What I'm hearing, if that helps.
The
road is long, the days are long. I mean, we were talking at the very start about Runrock Minerals or Greatland Gold, and you know, even though those, you know, much larger companies, Rome isn't built for a day. It does take years of drilling and proving the resource and checking you have what you have. In your kind of your wildest dreams, I mean, that scoping study is a few years old now, and the capital expenditures you were talking about was like just under $80 million. Do you think that's still feasible, or would you rather have a larger plant in the future, do you think, or are you going to start small scale with open pit mining, or you're not quite sure yet?
Well, that's obviously ahead at the moment. I think it's going to be open pit for the immediate future, because the gold is coming to the surface all over Tetrit. I think it's fair to say, Captain, it's quite close to the surface also in Clay Lake. So the logical way, I think that's correct, Captain, isn't it? It's pretty close to the surface.
Yeah, that's how we discovered it, Richard. Originally, we channel sampled 18 meters in the stream there of gold. That was where we first identified the black carbonaceous shale, which is the stockwork zone.
So there. Point of view of the economics and of mining, obviously the logical thing would be to start with the surface opportunity, both to hopefully make a great deal of money out of that, and at the same time, of course, you're learning a lot of information which will be very, very valuable when you go further underground. We're still talking about, as I said, the first couple hundred meters sort of thing down. It's open beyond that, so it's there'll be people working on this for many, many years ahead. But we're glad to see it coming to the stage when one could see probably two mines coming in, one of them quite substantial, but talking about world-class and Clay Lake. But we're looking at Tetrit as well. You're looking at, 2 or 3 million ounces there. That's not to be sniffed at, it maybe because of the sheer size of what we've got. But if we were starting off an exploration and made a 2 or 3 million ounce gold discovery, we'd feel very, as it happens now, we have far more than that. But that's not an underestimate.
So we were talking a moment ago about how if these finds were in Canada or Western Australia, to start with, you probably wouldn't have got a hold of them because the competition with them would be so fierce. I guess that, you know, one of the reasons why those destinations are so popular, other than the regulation, is very pro-mining politics. You've got a skilled labor force. The infrastructure is often there. So if you find a gold find in Western Australia, often there's a plant you can run it through already. I guess the question is, how easy will it be to bring your find online once you get there? Is it going to be a bit difficult from a political perspective? I guess you could argue that the politicians will let you kind of dig in the ground, but getting mining licenses will be a little bit harder. What do you think?
Well, anything like that certainly is a fairly demanding exercise, both environmental studies and so on to do. But positive aspects, first of all, although cities in Ireland, many parts of Ireland have been doing very, very well indeed in recent years, nonetheless, there is a need for employment in the rural areas. This is both Northern Ireland and the rest of Ireland. So it's very attractive from a mining point of view. Remember, we've brought in a mine in Ireland before, the only Irish group to have done so. We brought through all the various procedures and so on and gave quite a lot of employment direct. But what was very interesting in some ways was the indirect employment, which we had estimated would be about 4 to 5 to 1 compared with the mine employment. It turned out to be 6 to 7. The spin-off of that is still working. Similarly, in relation to other zinc mines that were discovered in Ireland, they have in turn a relation to immediate things, such as processing laboratories in the OMAC ELS processing laboratories, now one of the major world processing laboratories. So there's a lot of spin-off. People are used to the mining. There are people both in Ireland. You've got services available. You've got a very good road infrastructure. You know where you are from the point of view of taxes and so on. It's not going to suddenly change or anything like that. From abroad, there are many Irish people who are in the industry and would like to come back to work in Ireland. And then there are lots of other people, quite frankly, who would be as happy to be working in the Irish situation as compared to somewhere up in the far north of Canada or away in the depths of Australia. We'll be able to find the staff all right. I think it could all work very successfully. There will be an awful lot of hard work in it, and it's very important for a company to get on, most of all with the local population. Kevin has been referring there to the geochemistry and so on. When our charts go out, even just to take a soil sample, they will always go to the local farmer or owns the land and explain what they want to do. And it will work even from the point of view of taking soil samples. If he has a crop in his field for the next couple of months, they'll say, well, can we take it around the margins of the field, the hedges, or alternatively come back in 3 months' time? And that's there from the very beginning, and we've continued it through. That our managing director, Warren Jones, myself, we make it our business and are very happy to do so, to be available on the ground, say hello to people, call in. Anyone wishes to contact us from various local communities, we're very happy to hear from them and they're happy to hear from us. We're already employing some people down there on a small scale at the moment, but hopefully that will expand considerably.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Do you know why I'm thinking about it? Canada, 6 months of the year, it's freezing cold winter. You can barely do anything. Most of Africa, rainy season, 4 or 5 months. Again, you can really not do very much. Australia sounds great, but there's a million snakes and it's boiling hot. Obviously, there's no snakes in Ireland. Sounds wonderful. I guess, Kevin, I mean, you've done some significant drilling.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was just thinking, now, why don't I just get on a plane, pop over, bring a spade. I know where the drill spots are. Just dig up a few nuggets. Apparently, it's right on the surface. That sounds like a wonderful holiday plan. Does that keep you up at night, maybe? 1,000 people coming over?
No, it doesn't. No. So, obviously, just wanted to touch on there was, yeah, actually, in County Monaghan, we actually already have one of the largest pits in operation in the country. There's quite a large gypsum mine, actually, there. And I think in the beginning of the year, in January, they got a new extension to that open pit. So the area we're working in historically has been known as the Armagh Monaghan Mining District. So there is being quite a bit of historical mining in the area. Plus, as I say, one of the largest pits in Ireland, open pits. And there is also a significant amount of quarries in operation in the area as well. So, but yeah, no, the drilling, certainly you would have to be able to process it, but there are obviously the cream kill area where we have all that free gold. You could crush that rock and take the gold out, but we haven't been very specific with where it is located.
No, that's probably a good idea. I'm in Devon and, there are certain streams around here, especially on Dartmoor, which are, you know, kind of famous for yielding small amounts of gold. So you see hundreds of tourists in the summer, you know, the little panhandles trying to get gold out the stream. They don't tend to get very much, but it sounds like you've just got it kind of laying around on the floor for someone to come and dig.
I can show you some slabs. We took some slabs and we got them cut, sliced open, and it's like a shotgun has hit it, and it's just totally peppered. With visible gold in it. Of course, you'd be more than welcome to come over. I know Phil and Kevin came over, and they were very impressed with what they saw. I liked it. But it's great, and it's in this quartz breccia, and as I say, it's totally, the gold is totally disseminated through it. And we had like a trenching there where we got, you know, a meter intersection at 64 grams a ton. So as I say, this is right at surface.
So I mean, I'm kind of out of questions now. you didn't need to sell it all to me because I was already sold. But it was great to, you know, talk to both of you and, you know, get your perspectives both on the finance, the political, the JV deal, but also, you know, more of the technical questions and what's going to happen next. And I guess, you know, if I were to summarize it, you know, for the people listening, and that there's going to be a fair few of them, Conroy Gold share price is, you know, kind of at a very low level. They've done millions of euros of drilling, and there's going to be millions of euros more funded by their JV partner. We've got multiple targets. Quantibra is the most advanced, but Clay Lake is looking very promising. And you have, you know, this 1,000 square kilometers of exploratory area to go through, two massive gold trends. And essentially, you know, my perspective is, and I can't give advice, but if you were to buy shares, wait a handful of years, you will be handsomely rewarded. And I think that kind of sums it up. Would you say that's about right, Professor?
I would absolutely agree. Sure, yeah.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, it was lovely to talk to both of you. Have a wonderful rest of your week.
We'll say Professor Conroy, Kevin McNulty, Charles Archer, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.